Welcome to the Deep Dive. You sent us a massive stack of sources from Tech in Morning detailing the biggest tech announcements of early January 2026. And honestly, the volume of breakthroughs is just staggering.
It really is. It wasn't a trickle of news, it was a deluge.
We're looking at seven fundamental shifts in technology, from displays that literally disappear to AI that is mastering Hollywood-grade visuals, and even the surprising death of the physical button.
Right.
So our mission today is pretty clear. We need to filter out the marketing hype and get right to the engineering core. What do these complex changes mean for the next 5 years of tech? And maybe more importantly, what are the economic forces driving them?
This is a fantastic stack of sources because they confirm what we've been seeing. That blistering pace of innovation, it's not slowing down. It's accelerating.
It feels like it.
And if you're trying to figure out what happened this month, you need to see the underlying pattern. We're moving beyond simple iteration. We're seeing a fundamental redesign of, well, the entire user interface. We're going to peel back those layers to understand the why behind all of it.
Okay, let's start with the big one, the visual spectacle, the true showstopper, Samsung's transparent microLED. Now, we've seen transparent screens before. I remember the transparent OLEDs.
Oh, yeah.
And they looked terrible. They were translucent. They had this awful gray tint, and they just completely washed out in any kind of ambient light.
That's a perfect way to put it. Those older screens, they had a core physics problem, which was just light blockage. In any traditional display, especially OLED, you have layers, you know, the cathode, the anode, the polarizing filters.
Oh, stacked on top of the pixels.
Exactly. And those layers block a significant amount of light trying to escape, and they also block light trying to pass through. That's why they were so tinted and dim.
So if the old way was just stacking components, what did microLED change in what the sources call the pixel architecture to make it truly functionally invisible?
They leveraged two key advantages that are pretty unique to microLED. First, they're inorganic, unlike OLEDs, which means they can be printed directly onto the glass substrate. No need for all those complex protective layers. Second, and this is the real engineering secret the sources highlight, the aperture ratio.
Aperture ratio.
Think of it this way. Instead of covering 100% of the screen surface with material, Samsung shrunk the actual light-emitting microLED chips down to the micrometer scale.
And that's what creates the massive gap, right? The sources claim something like 90% of the entire panel's surface area is now empty space.
Exactly. When you look through it, you are looking through 90% clear glass. Your brain just processes the image from the light being emitted by that tiny 10% of active pixels, and it fills in the blanks. It creates this illusion of a full image just suspended in a clear window.
But wait, if only 10% of the surface is generating light, doesn't that create a huge problem for brightness? That's where the old tech always failed. It just couldn't compete with daylight.
That's the crucial question. And that's why microLED is the silver bullet here. Unlike OLED, microLEDs are just inherently brighter, far more energy efficient. So they can drive that tiny 10% surface area with enough intensity to overcome almost any ambient light. The older organic tech, it couldn't do that without drawing immense amounts of power.
That makes the engineering achievement much, much clearer. And you mentioned a key practical benefit, the modular tile design. This is less for our living rooms and more about, say, architecture and commercial use, right?
Precisely. Because microLEDs are inorganic and have no bezels, the black frames we're used to, they can be made as tiles. The forces explain they use light refraction tech to make this seam between the tiles just vanish.
So you can make a screen of any size.
Literally infinite size. Or, more interestingly, you could integrate them into curved glass walls, store windows, car windshields, all without those ugly joints. We've moved from screens to smart windows.
So we're removing physical components to make the interface invisible, and that trend continues right into our pockets. Let's go from the invisible screen to the invisible button. The sources confirm the revival of Project Bongo for the iPhone 17 Air, the solid-state haptic buttons, the ones that failed on the 15 Pro because of manufacturing issues.
This is a huge confirmation.
Yeah.
And the main reason for getting rid of moving buttons is just pure resilience. A physical button is a point of failure. It's a weak spot against the elements.
And getting rid of those weak spots is what allows for what the sources call an IP69 rating. For anyone listening who hasn't tracked IP ratings, what's the jump from IP68 to IP69? Why does that matter?
So IP stands for ingress protection. IP68 means it's dust tight and can survive in deep water. IP69 is the next level. It means that the device can withstand high pressure, high temperature jets of water.
Like a power washer.
Think of it as surviving professional power washing, yeah. Without buttonholes, the phone can be completely sealed, structurally robust, durability goes way up.
But we're creatures of habit. We need that physical click to know we've done something. How do you replicate that? It feels like a psychological hurdle, not just an engineering one.
It's a beautifully complex trick. It combines detection and feedback. First, detection. Instead of a button, they embed strain gauges inside the metal frame.
Okay.
These sensors don't wait for a button push. They measure the tiny microscopic deformation of the metal frame itself when you press on the side. And crucially, they measure that deformation in newtons. So it requires intentional force. The sources really emphasize this is the key to stopping those phantom presses that plagued the early prototypes.
So it won't just go off in your pocket.
Exactly. It's measuring force, not just touch. And that force sensitivity is what lets you, say, press harder to scroll volume faster. It gives you a much wider range of input.
Right. And the feedback, the actual click.
That's the haptic illusion. The 17 Air adds two tiny localized haptic engines right where the buttons would be. When the strain gauge registers that force, these engines fire a sharp, high-frequency vibration, a crisp click, in under 5 milliseconds.
It's a perfectly timed lie, the phone tells your brain.
A perfect lie. It's the same trick my MacBook trackpad has used for years. I feel the click, but the glass hasn't moved at all. It's replacing physical friction with this pure, instantaneous sensory illusion.
And speaking of eliminating physical friction, that brings us right to gaming. The confirmation that the Nintendo Switch 2 will use Hall Effect joysticks is a huge deal. You called this the silver bullet for stick drift. Why is this one component causing so much celebration?
Because it targets the systemic failure of controllers for the last, what, 2 decades? Every major controller, DualSense, Xbox, and especially the current Joy-Cons, uses what are called resistive potentiometers.
And those rely on physical contact.
Exactly. To measure the stick's position, a tiny metal wiper physically drags across a carbon track. That movement changes the resistance, which tells the console where you're pointing. The failure point is inevitable. It's friction.
Friction and dust, I'm guessing.
Yes. The constant metal-on-carbon grinding creates microscopic conductive dust. That dust settles on the board, creates tiny short circuits, and registers ghost movements. That is stick drift. It's not a defect. It's an unavoidable mechanical outcome of the design.
And this is where the solution is so elegant. Hall Effect sensors, a technology from 1879, solves this hyper-modern gaming problem by just removing the contact.
It's a beautiful historical irony, isn't it? Hall Effect sensors just use magnets. The joystick shaft has a magnet, and a stationary chip measures the change in the magnetic field as the stick moves.
No physical contact.
Zero physical contact means zero friction, zero wear, and zero conductive dust.
So, unless the spring snaps, these joysticks are basically infinitely durable. But what about the precision benefit? The sources were really strong on this point.
That's the other massive win. The resistive parts create what engineers call electrical noise. It's messy data from the friction. So, current consoles have to use a large software dead zone, a buffer around the center, to ignore that noise.
To hide the minor drift.
Right. But because Hall Effect sensors deliver perfectly clean, low-noise data, Nintendo can shrink that dead zone to almost zero. For you, the listener, this means the Switch 2 will offer immediate pixel-perfect response. It could be the most precise console for shooters or any game that requires delicate aim.
That is a huge quiet victory for gamers. Okay, let's pivot entirely from physical hardware to aesthetic reality. If the Micro LEDy was a showstopper, the sources suggest Netflix's short film The Midnight Signal is an earthquake for Hollywood.
It is.
And they openly credited the visuals mainly to OpenAI Sora.
This is so much more than a novelty. It signals a fundamental shift in how creative work gets done. The film demonstrates, frankly, a terrifying technical leap in AI, the acquisition of object permanence.
Okay, unpack that phrase for us. Why did older AI video models fail, and what does permanence fix?
Previously, AI video was all about pattern prediction. It predicted the next frame from the last one, but it didn't understand 3D space. So if a character turned their head, the AI might forget what an ear looks like or the back of their head.
So features would just morph or melt.
Exactly. The world was inconsistent. But the forces point to specific details in The Midnight Signal that prove Sora has fixed this.
Right, the car rotation scene.
Yes. As the camera orbits the car, two things happen. First, the lighting shifts realistically. Sora is basically simulating ray tracing internally. It understands how light and 3D surfaces interact.
And second.
And this is the most important part. The license plate remains absolutely consistent through the entire 360-degree turn. It doesn't melt, It doesn't swap letters, it is permanent.
The license plate doesn't melt. That's the detail to remember. It means Sora has gone beyond predicting pixels. It's internally simulating a physics engine and a consistent, believable 3D world.
Exactly. That ability proves the AI can manage continuity, which is the absolute foundation of professional filmmaking. And economically, well, this is the crisis. Netflix just showed it can produce a feature-quality scene at a cost that will potentially be 90% lower than traditional production.
And that 90% cost saving is what the sources link directly to the prediction of the next big wave of union strikes. Hollywood can't ignore this.
The incentive is just too powerful. It forces studios to weigh production value against these immense savings. This is going to ignite a huge conflict between the creative workforce and the financiers.
Let's shift from the creative economy to the platform economy. Another critical signal this week, Steam passing 40 million concurrent users. This isn't just a big number. It represents a fundamental rebalancing of the PC gaming market.
40 million simultaneous users is staggering. And the sources break this surge down into three interconnected drivers. The first is what they call the end of exclusivity.
Meaning Sony and Microsoft are finally putting their big console exclusives on PC.
Correct. They've accepted that PC is native ground.
Yeah.
So Steam, by hosting everything, PC exclusives, former PlayStation hits, former Xbox titles, has become the neutral territory, the Switzerland of gaming.
You don't need three different launchers anymore.
The audience is just consolidating in one place. And driver number two, that massive surge in simultaneous use, it has to point to a change in how and when people are playing.
The handheld explosion.
That's it. The Steam Deck OLED, ROG Ally X, Lenovo Legion Go. These are maturing now. Millions of people who used to be offline on their commute or in bed are now logged into Steam on a handheld. It's fundamentally expanding session time.
So it's not just more users. It's the same users active more often in more places. And the third factor is about emerging markets.
This is pure economics.
Okay.
Regional pricing.
Mm-hmm.
In huge markets like Brazil, Eastern Europe, Southeast Asia, a $70 console game is often just completely unaffordable.
Right.
Steam has skillfully used regional pricing and their big sales to offer a viable entry point. So the growth isn't just coming from North America and Western Europe anymore. It's coming from everywhere else, driven by affordability.
That paints a really holistic picture. Okay, let's wrap our hardware analysis with robotics. We finished the week with Elon Musk's video of the Tesla Optimus Gen 3 cooking an egg. And yes, the robot spilling the salt was a universally funny moment.
It was funny, but we can't let the salt spill distract from the engineering achievement of cracking the egg itself. That was monumental.
Why so?
To crack a fragile egg without pulverizing it requires tactile sensors that can register pressure variances measured in mere grams.
Incredibly precise real-time control.
Absolutely. And that feedback, that pressure data, has to be processed instantly by an end-to-end neural network. And this is the key. Optimus wasn't given a script on how to do it. It learned the fine motor skill by watching thousands of hours of human video data.
Yeah.
It mastered a messy human task through observation.
So learning fine motor control is the breakthrough. But the salt spill proves there are still huge limitations.
It does. The robot handled rigid body manipulation, the predictable physics of a solid egg or a pan. But failing to pour salt correctly shows that AI still struggles profoundly with granular physics. Fluid and particle dynamics.
It doesn't have a feel for it.
The AI does not yet possess the precise physical model for how tiny particles flow, which means the chefs are safe for now. Optimus can cook the food, but it can't season it properly.
It has the strength, but not the finesse.
A perfect summary. The finesse of particle dynamics is the next big hurdle for general purpose robotics. So if we pull back and synthesize all this, from micro LEDs to Sora, the common thread is the removal of physical boundaries and moving parts. We're removing friction from controllers, buttons from phones, mechanical failure points, and at the same time, we're seeing this explosive growth in synthetic content that's moving from just prediction to full internal simulation.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Well, the screens you interact with are becoming invisible. The input devices you use are finally fighting friction with magnets. And specialized AI is learning gram-level fine motor skills just by watching us. It's an exhilarating but also a dizzying picture.
And this raises an important question for you to think about. If our physical hardware disappears entirely, displays integrated into every surface, buttons replaced by unseen haptics, and all our interfaces become functionally non-existent, what happens when that simulated physics engine inside Sora becomes indistinguishable from the reality we perceive? Does the distinction between the real and the synthesized even matter anymore?
That's a deep question to leave you with. Thank you for diving into the source material with us. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.